This episode of Commentary, Trek Stars, is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Season 3, Episode 13 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. Today is Part 2 in our series on Robert Hewitt Wolff as an unsung hero, where we will be looking at Wolff's first TV project post-Star Trek, Futuresport. I'm Mike.
I'm Max.
And today we are joined by Brandon of Commentary, Trek Stars Off Topic. How's it going, Brandon?
I'm good.
That's good to hear. It's a pleasure, as always. So the year is 1997. Robert Hewitt Wolff leaves Deep Space Nine, and according to the Deep Space Nine Companion by Terry Erdman, he signed a production deal with Fox. And his first project, post-DS9, was a TV movie, which aired on ABC, called Futuresport. Now, I'm not sure if this was part of the deal with Fox or not, because Fox doesn't seem to be associated with this movie at all. It was released by Columbia and Home Video, Sony, and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's produced by Wesley Snipes' company and stuff. So I don't know whether or not this was part of the production deal, but regardless, this was his first post-DS9 project. And also, I don't know where I read this. I cannot find the source, but it was a pilot which didn't get picked up, but was then released as a television movie on ABC.
Like Virtuality.
Right, like Virtuality. Or,
surprisingly
or like the shows that Andromeda was based on, Planet Earth, Earth 2, Genesis yeah. 2, yeah. Whatever those things were named. There were like 15 of them. They all had different names.
I believe the total number is 126.
Yeah. So, Futuresport. Here's a synopsis, for what it's worth. I wrote this down because it's so complicated that I don't know how to word it easily.
Complicated? Did we see a different movie?
Okay, all right.
I think two things literally happen in this movie.
So here's the synopsis for Futuresport. In the year 2025, the world is on the brink of war. Mm. North America and the Pacific both lay claim to Hawaii, and a violent conflict seems inevitable.
I never quite clarify what the Pacific means.
Right.
So it's kind of a vague...
It was like a union of sorts, yeah, like North America.
I understand that. I mean, but anyway, you know, that's the least of its problems.
The most popular sport in the world is future sport.
That is the greatest of its problems. Continue.
Which is a game invented by Wesley Snipes' character as a way of alleviating gang warfare in urban environments. So now Dean Cain's character, who's like the Michael Jordan of future sport, proposes that instead of going to war, North America and the Pacific should play each other in future sport, with Hawaii going to the winner.
See, that actually makes it sound a lot better than it is. Because what happens, basically, there's a they kind of set up the whole Pacific Rim thing with the terrorist attack at the... Yeah. So there's a last, like a championship game. And then the Pacific... I guess they're a terrorist. They feel more like a terrorist cell than like an actual government. But they attack the stadium where the last game is. So that sets up how awesome everyone is. And then the main character, what's his name? Superman.
Dean Cain.
Dean Cain. He's very cocky. He's concerned about his what are the points called? The PI.
They have like a public.
Index or something.
Yeah, like yeah. Basically to say how popular you are
right.
In the world.
He's very concerned about his PI index or whatever.
It's how many friends he has.
Essentially. Yeah. And he's cocky, and then he doesn't pass the ball. So in the end,
it bites him in the ass. So wouldn't he be more like the Kobe Bryant of future sport? Or Shaquille O'Neal? Michael Jordan was a very good team player, as I understand it.
He dominated, though.
Did he?
Yeah.
But either way, so he is the reason they lose the championship game, and then
he's the Barry Bonds of future sport.
It's fantastic.
All right,
why is he the Barry Bonds?
Because all he cares about is himself, and he's really really good.
Okay. Anyway, so he loses. His team loses. His PI points go down. Also, the thing is that he's from the streets. But he has left that life behind, and like he has become like a sellout in a sense. He's about the winning at all costs and not the true essence of future sport.
Yeah.
So he talks to Wesley Snipes, his character, who kind of reminds him of his roots. So he.
See, which the leads funny him thing, to, remember when you were saying like it's not that complicated? I think you're making it ridiculously complicated.
But it's not. It's the movie doesn't just start with "Hey, let's solve world problems."
Well, I was trying to give like a 2-line synopsis. I know that you're a big fan of the like 10-minute long synopses.
But there's you have to explain the ridiculousness of this movie.
Fair
enough. Synopsicate it.
Exactly.
Fair enough. Okay, so now before we get into our thoughts on this, I do have to say that I hadn't seen this, and I know that neither of you had.
Or and, ever wanted to see it.
Well, hang on. But you're the only one, because every other person that I've talked to, because we always try to find someone who's like a fan of whatever it is we're talking about. And, you know, I was emailing and texting, you know, everyone I could think of and saying like, hey, have you seen Future Sport? And the response was always like, no, I've never heard of it up until now, but I just looked it up and it looks amazing. I need to see this thing right now. You know, there were like multiple people who said that to me.
Oh.
So I sent a tweet to Robert Hewitt Wolf saying that, basically, because I thought it was kind of funny and cool. He sent me a tweet back saying, tell them to lower their expectations. No, lower. No, lower still. Wait, that's too low. Okay, perfect. So Wolf is not a fan of Future Sport. Brandon, are you a fan of Future Sport?
Do you like basketball vaguely?
Yeah.
Do you like skateboarding vaguely? Well, imagine you put those two things together and how unexciting that is.
I mean, you say that. It sounds pretty exciting.
And
then well, yeah, like imagine like Tony Hawk Pro Skater, but like you do one of those awesome like jumps off of the bowl and you dunk a ball.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe.
That would be amazing.
Once, I guess, one time. And perhaps if they had some idea of how to shoot that and make it interesting.
Yeah.
If you didn't have a TV movie budget.
Yeah.
I feel like that's not a really good excuse for why that game didn't look exciting. The mere fact they call it Future Sport.
Right. Yeah. And they're we're in the future now. That's what our sport is called.
You know it's the future because it's horrible CGI buildings.
Yeah.
And, oh.
Like, how come we don't call this, like, future podcasting? Because, I mean, it's, like, 2014.
We can.
Like, well, we've, like.
Why not?
We're only 11 years away from
future sport.
Yes.
Yeah. At this point.
Yeah.
We are closer to the future of future sport than we were to when future sport aired.
I do love the nod they give. I think towards the end, where it's like, President Clinton. And they're like, President Clinton? That doesn't make any sense. It's Chelsea Clinton.
Yeah.
So
we're
really in the future.
No. But here, that's something that I want to talk about because, I mean, I didn't like the movie. Okay. I thought it was bad. But there were things in it which were really interesting. Like the popularity index or whatever it was, like you're saying. I mean, yeah, that's basically like checking to see how many friends you have on Facebook. I mean, that exists. And I mean, you can kind of see us getting to this point. Like I watched this movie right before the two conference championship games for the NFL last Sunday. And after, you know, like when I watched the movie, there was that scene, a couple scenes afterwards where they're interviewing the players and they're saying, like, what do you think about this? And they're just, like, going crazy and, like, shouting and stuff like that, like wrestlers, like pro wrestlers do. And obviously pro wrestlers are putting on a show, you know? And these are supposed to be professional athletes. And usually when they talk to professional athletes, it's more subdued. And you know, usually they're just reading off of a script, essentially, you know, like, we got to play for 60 minutes and, you know, give it 110% or whatever. Sometimes if they go crazy, you know, they'll say something which they shouldn't say and then regret it or whatever. But it's usually done rather quietly. And this is, like, completely over the top, like many things in the movie. And I felt like, man, this is really over the top.
I mean,
then I watched these two football games. And as everyone knows now, except for probably Max over here, right after the last game, mm-hmm. Richard Sherman is pulled off to the side to be interviewed by Erin Andrews. And she's like, tell us about that last play. And he just went off on, you know, one of the players on the other team, and like literally like looking into the camera shouting like, don't test me with someone who's mediocre, you know, that kind of thing. Way more over the top than Future Sport. And it's like things like that, things like the President Clinton thing with Chelsea. I mean, we're not too far off from that stuff, you know. I mean, we've already had, you know, since then, one president who was a child of another president.
I mean, that's not, and we've had multiple children.
No, but it followed by an election where, you know, a relative of Clinton came very, very close to getting elected. Like, we almost had, you know, Bush, Clinton in, you know, four consecutive presidencies. It's like, who's to say that Chelsea is not going to be a president? I mean, it's almost become like a...
I know that this is audio, but I'm going to raise my hand right now.
Yeah.
I'm to say that.
I know you're to say that.
I'm going to say that Chelsea Clinton is not going to be running for president.
I'm not saying that Chelsea Clinton is going to be running for president. I'm just saying this idea of, you know, it being almost a birthright.
I think the Chelsea thing is not that exciting and kind of a throwaway thing.
It's a throwaway thing. It might have been just a funny bit. But what I'm saying is these little things in here.
If you want to find things to like about it, you can do that. Like, if you want to find things to like about Future Sport, it's not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to talk about what the majority of Future Sport is, it's things that don't really work.
Sure.
And that they have this PI index thing. That's a completely reasonable concept, and it's essentially the kind of thing that we have nowadays. It's also the kind of thing they had back then. It's just more quantified because it's like an entirely networked society.
Sure, and like any science fiction, you know, this is trying to reflect the society that it's in.
I know what you mean, but I think that there's other things going on. The idea being part of this weird concept is essentially a sort of alternative to the war concept. It's a way of like supplanting war as a means of global change
by
creating the Future Sport game as a proxy for nations competing in other various forms. That's not reflective of society. That's not reflective of now. It's essentially a kind of like Star Trek like concept where you say like, well, what if we did this instead of this? Would that work? Let's try that out. And like Star Trek, like a society that doesn't have money, a society that solves its conflicts with a game of roller basketball, does not make sense. And does not, you know, you can't put that particular puzzle piece into any other puzzle because that piece doesn't fit.
But the idea behind it is noble.
Sure, but when the positive, hopeful, benevolent, kind idea doesn't work at all,
okay, but
it actually makes the idea look stupid.
But here's a thought, okay?
Like, and this movie convinced me that war is really necessary.
Look, whether or not this is true,
it would
never
work another way.
But who's to say that the idea behind this isn't to say, look at this ridiculous idea. Okay, we're going to settle our conflicts with Future Sport, you know? And you hear that and you're like, really, you're going to settle this? And then they're like, yeah, well, we could do that or we could go out and kill people. Now, which sounds like the better idea to you? They even say that. Even Dean Cain is like, I know you're going to think I'm crazy, But tell me, is it not more crazy to go to war? And, you know, if you're sitting there watching that and you're thinking like, yeah.
I mean, obviously they
well,
want.
Hang on. If you're thinking that, you know, yeah. I mean, because I couldn't help but think that, you know, like, while this isn't at all realistic, it is just.
It's a nice idea.
It's a nice idea to think However, that we can settle our concepts through war, through future sport. But, okay, maybe making it as ridiculous as they did, calling it future sport, making it roller basketball and everything, maybe the idea behind that was to say, look at how ridiculous war is, because even this idea, which is straight up ridiculous, is less ridiculous than going to war.
No.
Why?
Because while they're doing this completely absurd thing, there are still murders happening.
Well, yeah.
There are still people trying to win by any means, which basically is war.
Well, maybe. They're,
like, they've essentially just said, like, okay, well, let's limit our war to this one particular auditorium on this one particular day, and we're going to do whatever we can to make things go our way. And let's say, hypothetically, the game ends, and they're like, oh, wait.
And
it would not work, and it would make things worse.
I'm not saying that it would
so
work.
So the game is created to solve gang problems, correct?
Yes.
Originally?
Mm-hmm.
But there's still poor people, and there's still poor areas, and there's still, like, rundown areas. So, like, the kind of manifestations of those issues aren't really resolved. They're just kind of... This game that kind of placates right. these rebel gangs.
It's essentially a distraction.
Yeah.
And it works as a distraction.
But it's basically, I mean, it is something which exists now. I mean, they have
sports in general.
Yeah,
well,
that's they have the Midnight Basketball League in Chicago.
But it's not quite the same thing, because future sport can actually work as an alternative to gang violence, because it's incredibly violent and you can actually injure people the game.
You could do that.
So if you want to beat the opponents and their rival gang, it's actually pretty easy to get into a game of future sport and break a leg, because it happens.
You could play football or hockey.
Like they say, like street rules, they will break bones.
Yeah,
this is how it works in the street,
right?
Because it's not a game to them.
Right,
it's a way of winning.
Okay.
I just love the fact that I believe the game was created 20 years prior to the movie, and it was still called Future Sport. That's just very.
It was still the future. It's 2005.
That's the
thing. You could set a modern day show or call it Future Sport, have a made up game called Future Sport.
There's nothing wrong with having a game called Future Sport. The problem isn't that the game is called Future Sport. The problem is that this movie, let's say it's a movie, it's not a pilot, let's just call it a movie, features almost every single thing can be prefaced with the word future. Like
the guy with the cameraman with the camera on his face.
Yeah, future camera.
Oh, that exists now, though.
Yes, sure. Future skateboard.
Mm-hmm.
Future watch. Future roundhouse kick. Future Jamaican accent.
Let's talk about
mm-hmm.
this idea that this was going to be a show.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there is, even though I can't find the source, I know I read it, and there is evidence in the piece itself. For example, the credits, it says starring Dean Cain and Vanessa Williams, special guest star Wesley Snipes. That doesn't happen unless you're Quentin Tarantino. So it was going to be a TV show. I'm nearly positive.
It was
that.
Maybe 99%.
99% positive. It was going to be a TV show.
Okay.
But there's things in there. Well, there's two sides of that. First off, what do you think the TV show would have been? Because, spoilers, the way that this movie ends is they win and they get Hawaii and the conflict is resolved and future sport goes on as we enter a new era of future sport.
Maybe they want Guam.
Oh, yeah, by the way,
next time.
They do actually, the guys in red, white, and blue do win the game and get Hawaii, despite that being kind of not really... cares. Why it was
right.
I
honestly didn't know who was going to win, but regardless of that, I think the reason why that's important is because you see that Dean Cain is victorious. You know?
Yeah, why does he have to be victorious? Why can't the idea be victorious?
Well,
why does he have to be
victorious?
Well,
I mean, I guess here's
it kind of makes it look silly that he has to win.
Well, okay. Here's the question though. What would the show
so
be?
Much stuff.
Like what is episode two? What is your typical episode of Future Sport? What happens in this show?
I think if they had lost a game, episode two would be they win something small.
Well, considering the fact that they won, what's episode two?
There has to be another island or another territory that they need. Like that they're fighting
so
over.
So this is what they
so
do?
The Guam,
they just go and try to take over the world like in sort of like Alexander fashion and by playing Future Sport?
Like a game of Risk, but instead of rolling dice to determine who wins the fight, you put the game in a room and then you go play some basketball and whoever wins that
Risk.
Fight.
Yeah.
I mean, I would assume that they're playing... I mean, I really have no idea where they would go with this thing. I really have no idea what the next episode of Future Sport would be.
That's... yes, because the problem is that if this is a show where these guys, like, take part in these conflicts, they pick the North America side, then it's just, you know, a series of games where North America decides... problems by having their team win for them?
See, I'm thinking it would end up being more of sort of like what happened in that section of the movie between when they came up with the idea and when they actually played the game. I think there'd probably be a lot of like terrorist organizations who are like,
right,
we don't like these guys.
Right.
We're going to try to get rid of them.
Right. If every episode of the show has somebody trying to take out one of the members of the game or try to force them to throw the game, then that's an unbelievably labored premise for a TV show.
I mean, I think a lot of it
on a weekly basis.
Well, I think a lot of it would be like Friday Night Lights, where it's like the games in a sense are oftentimes secondary and you might go like a month without even seeing a game. No? You think you're gonna see
Future Sport?
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Like if they had lost, then it could have been like just Dean Cain and his cast of characters dealing with this reality and maybe even participating in some games now and then. That's the problem. The idea was successful and the game was successful for them. That you don't need two victories. The idea being successful is enough. He prevented a war. Why does he also have to win the war that he prevented?
Yeah, I mean,
that's silly.
Yeah, perhaps you're right. The other thing about this, which I find interesting, is this aired on ABC, obviously. It was designed for to be a show, presumably on ABC. I don't know. But if you look at it, it's R-rated. There's one scene with a little bit of nudity. There's, you know, a few F-bombs which are dropped and whatnot.
What's an F-bomb?
Where you format your hard drive.
So I'm wondering how that all went down. I mean, you certainly hear of things like, for example, Mulholland Drive, you know, which obviously was designed originally as a pilot to a TV show, I think on ABC as well, and then when it didn't get picked up was greatly expanded upon to become what it is today. I mean, is this Robert Hewitt Wolff's Mulholland Drive?
No.
Okay.
Look, something obviously is crazy with the DNA of this thing. Something is wrong. Like this whole thing plays like, from a metaphorical point of view, like this movie is the child of a brother and sister. Because everything is short-circuited. There are like the science fiction elements in it are over the top. The sort of schlockiness of the concept of, you know, these guys and their super futuristic game and their super badass dudes is really overblown and looks very cartoonish. And that's a serious problem. And I think that at some point they must have just thought, who cares? Let's just be totally silly with this.
No.
It doesn't matter. I mean, it's a movie where they prevent a war by playing a game. Let's just go ahead and be nuts.
Well, maybe we can take a look at the origins of the people who are involved and see if maybe we can figure something out from there. Now, the script was written by Wolf, but the story is credited to both Wolf and another guy named Steve DeJarnot. He's written for a lot of TV shows. He wrote for The X-Files and stuff like that, but probably his biggest claim to fame, as far as I'm concerned, is that he is the director of Cherry 2000.
Yes.
A movie which I don't like, but I know Max is a fan of.
Oh, that movie's amazing.
Now, I don't know if he originally came up with the idea and then Wolf rewrote him or what, but yeah, there was obviously, you know, multiple people involved with the creation of this concept. It was directed by Ernest Dickerson, who is a really interesting guy. He got his start as Spike Lee's cinematographer. He shot all of Lee's movies from She's Gotta Have It up through Malcolm X, including Mo Better Blues and Do the Right Thing. Really good cinematographer, and someone who I've always been really interested because of that. His style, like Spike Lee, is very, his movies, one of the most interesting things about his career is the way that as he picks up new cinematographers, he picks up new techniques and styles, and he adds that to his arsenal. But Dickerson's work is kind of like the foundation of Lee's visual style. And after Malcolm X, he went off to start making his own movies, and he has directed a number of feature films, including Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight, Bulletproof, Never Die Alone, which I think is a very good movie, and Bones, which is not a good movie, but very entertaining, with Snoop Dogg. It's fun. But now he's kind of settled into a role as a television director, and he's done some, I mean, like a lot of like really high-profile things. He directed a bunch of episodes of The Wire, which is obviously a fantastic show, and he directed a bunch of episodes of Walking Dead and a bunch of episodes of Dexter and a million other things, 4,400, everything you could possibly think of. So, you know, this is obviously probably something which was designed, you know, for him to set up the style of the show, and then he may or may not have left. But as it stands, I think it's one of his weaker movies, to be sure.
That's silly. It's a TV directing job. He did as good a job as the script is good.
Well, yeah, but it's also a pilot. Job, so what? Where you're responsible for establishing establishing
like lighting schemes, like thematic, like camera work, how much you use dolly track, that kind of thing, and it doesn't matter because there's nothing he could have done to make this better.
I'm not saying that. Well, I think visually he could have. I think that there are some problems with it.
I think that those were determined largely by sets and production capabilities.
I mean, that could be, but you know, I mean, you can't place all the blame for this movie on just the concept. You know, there is...
I can place a lot of blame on the concept.
You can place a lot of blame
on
the concept.
And I think that when your concept is a bunch of guys in a team in the future who play a game that doesn't exist with rules that we're going to kind of make up as we go along, and they fight other teams in this game in order to solve like actual real-world significant political disputes, at that point, if you keep going, you're going to make something bad.
Sure. But I'm saying you can't place all the blame on it. There are other problems with this movie aside from that. Anyway, no. Max, do you have any final thoughts on Future Sport?
There's a part of me that like would really love to see more things that are this silly get tried. Because if things that were this silly, we could actually get some really awesome stuff out there. And I think that a significant problem with this is the idea that people want things that are positive and nice, and the idea that the team has to win is embarrassing. I mean, I'm an audience member. I don't care if they win. I don't care.
It works for a movie. Like, if this as a standalone thing, that's fine, whatever. But again, as a concept for a TV show, it doesn't work.
There's actually a point in the climax, like the climactic, you know, game, where like the players on the other side, like, stop the dirty gamesmanship. They like the person on the field, whoever the big shot is on the field at that point, says like, we're not doing any more of that nasty stuff. Why can't that be more important? Why is it that there's this moment where she's like, we're not going to cheat anymore? It's like, you're playing a game to avoid a war. You are cheating. Like, that is a cheat. You are preventing a war by telling everybody that we're going to do this instead of a war.
But they kind of made a point of like, and this kind of goes to the problem of made up sport, like there's supposed to be a purity to the sport.
Yeah, but like there are a lot of problems with this concept, and if they had realized that this concept is the craziest future thing that they've got in this movie. They've got phones in your watch with cameras. They've got hoverboards. They've got, like, future guns that look exactly like the guns from Tech War. Because they probably are, I'm guessing. Like, all of this stuff. The craziest thing you've got is a bunch of people saying, yes, the outcome of this game will determine whether or not this political dispute ends one way or the other. How is it possible that people are not saying that's incredibly stupid? If there is a conflict between two countries, like if we had to go, all right, if we had to fight, like, Iran, right? But, like, the arena was suddenly not war, it was football, soccer, we would be screwed. They would win.
Probably not.
Yes, they would.
I don't know. I think against Iran, I think the U.S. would win in soccer.
Regardless, even if that's besides the point. Like, anyway. You're supposed to forget, like, hey, I have all these weapons, and you just beat us. Oh, well, let's go home. Let's back it up.
That's the thing. If you are fighting for something that is actually important and extremely necessary, then the outcome of the game will not determine anything. And if the outcome of the game does determine what happens, then really, you don't need a strong army or a good economy or people who can eat. You just need, like, 12 dudes who can skateboard and know how to throw a ball. Like, you can just throw away every other positive thing in your country and put all your resources into that. Well, it's an entirely ridiculous and terrible idea.
It's absolutely ridiculous. But, you know, if you look at what the message behind it is, you've got to look at the intent. And I think the message behind it is one which is very similar to Gene Roddenberry's. It's not at all realistic, but it's a good thought. Anyway. Well, that's it for Future Sport. We've had fun talking about Future Sport, right? But that's not the only thing we're talking about on Trek.fm this week. Here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Mark Cushman on Season 2.
Gene Kuhn was real good at writing comedy. And Gene Roddenberry did not want that for Star Trek. And Roddenberry just said, we are not going to go down that road.
Earl Grey.
The Borg on TNG.
But it's only one episode that we get this, like, technology-obsessed Borg until they become more of, like, a perfection-obsessed Borg. That they're trying to complete themselves, I guess. It's just kind of a strange anomaly.
There's a hole in their heart that only technology can...
Yes, Borg are the Jerry Maguire of You Complete Me.
The Ready Room.
Remember Me.
Well, one thing you didn't mention, that the fact that this is the only TNG episode to make it to Lilith Fair. You know, will you remember me?
Oh,
na, 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 na. Really? I mean, that's... You didn't know that? Okay.
The Orb.
Ferengi values versus Federation values.
We look at the Ferengi and we bristle at them because we don't like being reminded that if we lived our lives evolutionary-wise and that was all there was... You end up with nihilism.
To the journey!
Janeway's best command decisions.
I might be able to understand where you're coming from if part two of Scorpion was not completely devoted to explaining how Janeway was wrong in every single way. Warp 5.
Prequel technology.
You almost feel like photon torpedoes should have happened 50 years after Enterprise, and they should have gone through three different kinds that you'd never heard of. Yeah. And that seems more... Right. Real to me.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Robert Hewitt Wolf on Trek.
Some elements that are in Deep Space Nine that I've never been able to quite fit together with other elements, I think it might actually start to fit together once I understand Robert Hewitt Wolf's involvement, who I like to call R.H. Dubs.
Literary Treks.
Editing Star Trek with Margaret Clark.
I try to make sure that the books are true to their series. That if you're reading a TOS book, it feels like, okay, Bob Justman would have bought this story. He couldn't afford the effect, but Bob Justman would have gone into Gene and went, you really should read this, this is good.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows to get in on the daily Trek Talk. We have new shows for you every day, and you'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can stream and download files from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. Now, I know that, well, Max, you're not a big sport fan, Brandon. You
I'm
play
a huge sports enemy.
You play rugby, Brandon, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that's cool. That's a cool sport, okay, for sure. My sport of choice is obviously baseball, and my favorite book on baseball and one of my favorite books ever written is Moneyball: The Art of Winning an Unfair Game by Michael Lewis. And since you're a listener to Trek.fm, you can get that book for free on audible.com. Yeah, you. Yeah, you can. You totally can.
Oh.
Moneyball reveals a quest for something as elusive as the Holy Grail, something that money apparently can't buy, the secret of success in baseball. The logical places to look would be the giant offices of major league teams and the dugouts. But the real jackpot is a cache of numbers collected over the years by a strange brotherhood of amateur baseball enthusiasts, software engineers, statisticians, Wall Street analysts, lawyers, and physics professors. And this book is all about that. It's all about a dude who broke through the system and said, you know what, let's find value in where people don't know it exists, and let's change this game and build a winning team out of something. Essentially spare parts. And it is very inspiring and very interesting, even if you're not a baseball fan. But I mean, hey, if you're listening to this, chances are you're a Deep Space Nine fan. Maybe you want to understand more about the game, which is the backbone of Deep Space Nine.
The game that's the backbone of Deep Space Nine.
Anyway,
isn't that Move Along Home?
Regardless, Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic books you've yet to read, or the latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting Commentary, Trek Stars, and Trek.fm. So Brandon.
Yes.
You're a co-host with us on our other show, Commentary Track Stars Off Topic, where we talk about pretty much whatever we want to.
And we can curse.
Yeah, and we can curse, which makes editing a lot easier for me. People can find that show and you on CommentaryTrackStars.com.
That's true.
Along with us. And you can also email all three of us at comtrackstars@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter at comtrackstars. Thanks for joining us, Brandon. We really appreciate it. And we will be back next week to talk about Robert Hewitt Wolff's first full-fledged series, Andromeda.